Margaret Robinson here with the Two-Spirited Roundtable Project. Today I'm talking with Alec Butler, who's a Two-Spirited artist in Toronto. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about mental health and Aboriginal community. Thanks for joining me, Alec.
Oh, thanks for having me.
What kind of things have helped keep you healthy as a Two-Spirited person?
Frequent trips to the nature. I like being in nature. I always have since I was a little kid. Feel great affinity and healing when I'm in the woods, in the bush, camping, and hanging out with friends. And that's part of it, but I also have educated myself about the four sacred medicines. So I use them I burn them and take in the smoke, or I drink them in tea and help them calm myself. I smudge myself to get ready for important things, important engagements, and when I have to go out or when I have to meet people or go on trips, I always smudge myself with sage. And I also get a lot of comfort from smudging other people and doing stuff like that publicly. And I get asked to honor where we are on Native land a lot for community events, so I like doing that. And I like sharing, you know, the beauty of the four directions and the power of the four directions with friends, with students. I have some students too. And with the community, and helping them ground. I like helping them ground before, like, the trans march. Mm-hmm. I often do that. I've done that for the past 3 years. And shared some wisdom, the wisdom of the sweet grass, why it's braided in three. The three aspects of humanity brought together, and the earth, people, and air brought together. I find a lot of comfort in that. I've had my own struggles with mental health, like anybody else, I think, and a lot of my friends do. Being a colonized person, an oppressed person, who's been cut off from that information, from that knowledge for so many years, had it driven underground. And I educated myself about how illegal it was and how dangerous it was for my ancestors to practice the calling on the directions and stuff. I've read Black Elk, the Lakota healer. Love his story and the prayers he's passed on over the years. I also have had therapy myself. I was in therapy with they weren't two-spirit, they were gay, queer, and they trained themselves on psychodrama and bodywork.
Can you say a little bit about psychodrama and what that is?
It's a way of recreating traumas from the past.
Okay.
Like as a play that you can watch other people. Like in my case, it was my parents. They weren't dysfunctional, but they were very kind of depressed and kind of passed that on, mm-hmm. and being working class and poor. But we had a lot of fun and a lot of laughs.
Was that a method that attracted you as an artist?
Well, I had issues growing up intersex, right? Mm-hmm. Where my parents felt very isolated and didn't know what to do with me, didn't know how to help me. There was no parents of intersex kids group back then.
Yeah, you couldn't just look it up online.
No, you couldn't just look it up online. It was like a totally new thing for the community. It was like so different. But my family, I was lucky because they rallied around me and loved me and didn't think I was weird or anything. They just thought I was amazing. So I had that.
Do you think that's a function of working class family values or Aboriginal family values?
Probably a combination of both. Yeah. And the humor, too. We had lots of laughs. I also had the experience of being sexually abused when I was growing up. So I was abducted by a pedophile for 4 hours in Germany, when we lived in Germany. So that's really affected my family and my parents and me. I was like a really happy kid before that happened, and after that I was like a zombie for a few years, and they're really worried about me. And then the intersex stuff, and feeling like I really got it at school, let's just say that. You know, the teachers would say, oh, are you a boy or girl? The kids are you a boy or girl? I just felt like totally alien. And the only other friend I had was also a Native girl, First Nations girl, who was also mixed Dutch First Nations. So we were really close in Cape Breton, but before I lived in Cape Breton, I had another friend in New Brunswick at the Army base who was also mixed race, black and white, Sandy. So I always was attracted and drawn, I guess they were drawn to me, to people who were mixed, so.
And what were some of the sources of strength for you when all of these things were happening? What got you through the rough times?
I guess really believing in myself. Believing in myself, my family, nature. I always felt really safe just being alone in the woods, more so than being around a lot of people. So that helped me. I grew up in the bush too. When we moved to Cape Breton, we lived in the bush. So I had my special places I would go to and just hang out there and just look at nature and feel very comforted by nature.
There's something very accepting about those kind of environments.
Yeah, I listened to the birds. And I also had part of our Mi'kmaq thing that was kind of funny that I also had like a trap line in the winter. I would get trap rabbits, had a snare line, and I would catch rabbits. That's how I made money, to buy books and records, 45 albums, 45 records. Because I love reading. Reading also helped, yeah, I would say. I read a lot. I was very well-read from a young age. My teachers when I was in university were like, oh my god, you read more books than I have, and I have a PhD. So, reading and art, telling my own stories, writing. I started writing when I was about 10 or 11.
And what kind of impact does doing art have on mental health, do you think?
I think it has a tremendous impact. I think it's a way of finding out about yourself, a way of finding out about the rest of the world, a way of finding out about other artists who have struggled, like Van Gogh was a big, Vincent Van Gogh. It was like, when I saw his painting, I was like, I understood them perfectly. It's like, oh yeah. And then I heard about him, you know, cutting off his ear and his mental health, being in a mental institute, sanitarium he spent years in, like he signed himself in. Mm-hmm. And his own writings about his mental health issues. I was really inspired by that. Didn't feel so all alone anymore when I saw his paintings. And as you can see, I have like several. Well, in my other room, I have like 10 Van Gogh. These are actually all paintings of my mentor, Kathleen Brinley.
Oh, I know her. She helped us organize the Dyke March art show.
Yeah. I'm making a film about her.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so I'm making a documentary about her life and activism and
what about
art.
The activism with you? Has that been a aspect of keeping yourself mentally healthy? Do you?
Oh yeah, wow! Like, I find going out and yelling on the street is very, very cathartic. And I was actually a big part of the anti-racist movement in the 90s, anti-racist action. I helped organize a lot of anti-Nazi stuff with them. Marches and boycotts of couple of stores they had in Toronto. And it's also connected when we lived in Germany. My dad was in the army, so spent some years as an army brat. Mm-hmm. So we lived in Germany during the Cold War. So my dad took us to one of the concentration camps, Bergen-Belsen, when I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
Because he wanted us to know about fascism and Nazism. He's like, yeah, this is very dangerous, and I want you to see the results so you will know. Mm. And which I'm always thankful to him for doing that. And other people are like, oh, he took you to a kid to a concentration camp. I said, yeah, it's the best education you can have about fascism, colonialism, all those impulses.
Yeah.
And be aware of them. That also informed me why I became involved as an anti-fascist. I had a radio program with my friend Robin Rubinsky, we call him. Robin Turney. He's a queer punk anarchist from years ago. I've known for 20 years and maybe 25 years. Yeah, we also helped take care of friends of ours who were dying of AIDS.
Do you find that the activism around HIV and AIDS had any impact on the kind of stigma that people attach to mental illness in the queer community? Or do you find that it's been pretty much the same?
Yeah, there's quite a bit of stigma, even in the 90s. One of the reasons we kept our friends at home as long as we could was because we knew they were going caca, their dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, like, terrified that they're going to end up in mental hospitals and raving alone. We're like, we don't want our friends to end up like that, so we want to keep them home.
Because in many cases, people weren't even allowed to visit because, you know, family only can keep out all their actual support circle.
Yeah. So we were very radical that way, I guess, keeping our friends home and taking care of them ourselves as a community.
You must have learned a lot of valuable lessons about how to work with mental health issues in those situations.
Yeah, yeah. We, didn't want them to end up locked away in a psych ward because they were, you know, suicidal too. They were like really tired, really sick of fighting, and they wanted to kill themselves. Anyway, yeah, I learned a lot about mental health, and in the job I have now, I work as a frontline worker with homeless people. A lot of our clients, residents where I work, have a lot of mental health issues, addiction issues, and identity issues too. We also, one of the few shelters who will take in trans people, two-spirit people.
In the work that you do and in the community work that you've done, what kind of connections do you see between experiences of oppression and experiences of anxiety or depression or substance use?
Oh, well, a lot of it's connected to poverty of ideas around how to treat people with mental health.
Mm-hmm.
A very medical model, which really feels alienating to a lot of people, especially a lot of two-spirit people, cut off from their culture, is doesn't help. I'm always encouraging alternate forms of care, a more holistic approach to the body, mind, spirit. Yeah, not just focusing on outright medical. Anyway, so
taking the holistic
approach.
What kind of support services would you like to see? What do you think people need? What's missing?
Yeah, I think what's missing is the connection to the four medicines: the sage, cedar, sweetgrass, tobacco. Yeah, more of a knowledge about that. More two-spirit healers coming in, being recognized, being trained. I've actually, I have students who want to know more about this stuff, so I actually do have students who, I don't charge money for it. I don't believe in that. I believe in more of a barter kind of deal.
So you train them in healing?
Well, I kind of bring out what they have naturally. I don't say you have to do it this way, the way I do it. Do it the way you feel is comfortable for you to do it. Some people have a gift for it and deny it for years. So yeah, I think more support of things that feel more natural, holistic, nature-based, creator-based. I was actually just reading a book about Jung, Carl Jung, and his fascination with alchemy. And one of the bases of alchemy is four colors.
Oh, interesting.
Red, black, yellow, white.
The
same
familiar
colors. So I just found this information like a week ago.
Oh.
I'm like, wow. But the color yellow was dropped for some reason. There's always information you can discover and
make
connections.
I remember reading about the development of the rainbow flag and how there used to be more colors in it, and each color represented something.
Yeah.
And then they started dropping colors out of it to simplify it and to make it have only colors that were available from main flag maker organizations.
Oh.
And one of the things they dropped was spirit.
Oh.
Yeah, so as a two-spirited person, I always think, oh, that says a lot.
yeah. What color is that?
I think it was white.
White. Yeah. White is the color of spirit. The northern direction is the white and the source of spirit. Yeah, I guess all that has helped me keeping my own integrity, my own mental health. Also, something controversial that I also believe marijuana plays a role in helping people with their mental health, although there's been controversy that it can trigger psychosis. I think for some people, it helps. Some people have anxiety about food, eating.
Mm-hmm.
I have a little bit of that. It helps me eat.
I recently completed a study of looking at bisexual women and their use of cannabis. And one of the things they reported is using it to treat anxiety.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the symptoms they reported using it for were very anxiety-based, like racing thoughts, not being able to sleep, just having, not being able to shut your brain down and just relax for a couple of hours even.
Yeah.
That feeling like everything is immediately important and you have to go, 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 go.
Yeah.
That sort of alarm.
Yeah.
It's almost like symptoms of PTSD that people sometimes know. Like that kind of anxiety symptoms. It seems to be making a big difference for them with that.
I prefer it to taking Zyloft or Paxil or any antidepressant you can take.
You mentioned it's controversial. Do you think that's due to the way people tend to view the use of pharmaceutical-approved medical drugs versus self-medication?
Yeah, and a lot of therapists won't take you on unless you're clean, unless you're not smoking pot, right? Which I think is not great either.
Has it been an issue for you in accessing traditional ceremony? Some of the folks I talked to were actually turned away if they've been using.
Oh, I haven't been turned away. But I do recognize and follow the not drinking alcohol for 4 days before I do a ceremony. Well, I don't really drink alcohol anyway, except occasionally. So, yeah, I don't drink alcohol, but I will smoke, like, the day before, just because, you know, I have anxiety. It's my Paxil.
Do you find people in the queer community or in the two-spirited community are comfortable talking about their struggles with anxiety or depression, or is that something that people still try to hide from each other?
I think it's becoming more comfortable now. I think, it is still pretty stigmatizing to talk about that stuff and feel comfortable, I think. Hopefully people get over that, and because when you're out about it, it helps heal. When you be able to talk about it, voice it, have a witness to hear it, I think it helps. It helps towards the healing, right? So I always encourage that. I always put myself forward as a witness for people if they want to share very painful stuff. I'm always, over the years, I've always felt that people were found it easier. Like in my work with homeless people, they're always telling me horrible stuff that happened to them and feeling, you know, better afterwards.
Yeah. Reduces some of the burden of carrying it all along.
Yeah. So, yeah, so...
Do you find you encounter a lot of people who are working with intergenerational trauma? Like, things that were an issue for their parents and are now an issue for them?
Well, yeah, I have it in my own family. So I know it's in my friends, my two-spirit friends have had to deal with, you know, isolation and having parents who were drinkers and who kind of neglected them when they were kids, stuff like that. I have friends who went through that. Growing up, I guess in my own case, I never really had that. My parents were... My dad was an alcoholic, but he stopped before I was born. He's had a very bad drinking problem, but he got clean before I was even born. But he still had that kind of mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he wasn't drinking, he still had a very ways of coping that weren't healthy, like smoking a lot of cigarettes. Smoked a lot.
A lot of people in that generation smoked a lot, right?
Yeah. And my grandfather's story was, well, we can't really be sure where he came from. We think he might have run away from a residential school when he was 10.
Wow. Time to be on your own.
Yeah. This is in 19. He was born in 1902.
Wow.
So he ran away to Sydney and became a newspaper boy. We would stand on the corners and look at the headlines for the Cape Breton Post. until he was about 16, when his voice started to change. They only want prepubescent boys to do that.
It's like being in a choir.
Yeah. Being a castrati or something. So they hired him inside, laying type.
Oh.
So he worked there for 75 years.
Wow.
Well, 65 years. He died when he was 75. From the age of 10 till he turned 75.
You don't often see that kind of job security now.
Yeah. Well, it was either that or working the mines or the steel plant. He didn't want to... Well, he actually got sick from lead poisoning.
Oh, wow.
From laying the type when he was about 30. And he cured himself of that. But he worked briefly at the steel plant when he was better, and he hated it, so they took him back on the post when they had better safety standards for this lead poisoning stuff. And his inability to talk about all that when we were growing up, and even though his nickname was Indian John, I asked him once, why do they call you Indian John, puppy? Because I tan so well. It's like...
But
even
willing
my,
to
and I passed on to
say.
My mother. My mother was left school when she was 12 because she couldn't take the racism. She was called names all the time at school, dirty little Indian, stuff like that. She couldn't take it anymore. She left school when she was 12. But she was very smart, but she never had the education, right? That was her biggest regret when she was dying, that she didn't finish school, that she didn't do more with her life. Except be a mother and bring up three kids. And I'm like, but you brought up these three kids. Brought up me. She said, yeah. Yeah. I did give birth to you.
Well, you've achieved a lot with your work.
Yeah, yeah. They were very proud of me. They were very, you know, when I first started out, they were like, oh my God. You're going to do what? We're going to be a... They're like, you'll never, you know, but when... They're like very proud of me. When they died, all their friends would tell me at their funerals, oh, your parents, your father, your mother, they were so proud of you. It's like, oh, that's nice. Yeah.
I want to thank you for sharing your knowledge and your wisdom with us today. And I look forward to speaking with you again sometime in the future.
Oh, thank you, Margaret.
Thank you.